From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM, WBTV, LP, Burlington. Streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. Today on Write the Book, you'll hear a conversation with the authors Sharon G. Flake and Bill Konigsberg, both of whom have new books out for young adults. Sharon G. Flake's debut novel, The Skin I'm In, came out in 1998 and was named a Publisher's Weekly Flying Start. Since then, she has become a multiple Coretta Scott King Honor Award winner, and many of her novels have received ALA Notable and Best Books for Young Adult citations from the American Library Association. She lives in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Her new novel is The Life I'm In, published by Scholastic. In The Skin I'm In, readers saw into the life of Malika Madison, a teen who suffered from the ridicule she received because of her dark skin color. For decades, fans have wanted to know the fate of the bully who made Malika's life miserable, Char. In The Life I'm In, a sequel that Sharon G. Flake never expected to write, we follow Charlize Jones, who, with her raw, blistering voice, speaks the truths many girls face, offering insight to some of the causes and conditions that make a bully. Turned out of the only home she's known, Char boards a bus to nowhere, where she is lured into the dangerous web of human trafficking. Much is revealed behind the complex system of men who take advantage of vulnerable teens in the underbelly of society. While Char might be frightened, she remains strong and determined to bring herself and her fellow victims out of the dark and back into the light, reminding us why compassion is a powerful cure to the ills of the world. Bill Konigsberg is the author of 6 books for young adults, which have won awards including the Stonewall Book Award, the Sid Fleischman Award for Humor, and the Lambda Literary Award. Bill lives with his husband Chuck and their 2 Labradoodles, Mabel and Buford. His new Scholastic novel is The Bridge, in which 2 teenagers, strangers to each other, have decided to jump from the same bridge at the same time. But what results is far from straightforward. Aaron and Tilly don't know each other, but they are both feeling suicidal, and arrive at the George Washington Bridge at the same time, intending to jump. Aaron is a gay misfit struggling with depression and loneliness. Tilly isn't sure what her problem is, only that she will never be good enough. On the bridge, there are 4 things that could happen. Aaron jumps, and Tilly doesn't. Tilly jumps, and Aaron doesn't. They both jump. Neither of them jumps. Or maybe all 4 things happen. I spoke to Bill and Sharon in tandem last week. Our primary subject was writing for young adults and helping them through the difficult years of searching and discovery that is often so painful and even self-destructive. Our conversation about this subject and about their new novels, The Bridge and The Life I'm In, begins with my first question. I'm just going to start by reading an excerpt of each of your letters to your readers at the beginnings of your books, okay? So this is from the opening of The Life I'm In. Sharon writes in her earlier book, The Skin I'm In, it's primarily a black girl's story, yet it has weaved its way into the hearts of millions of young people around the globe, black, Native American, Asian, Caucasian, and Latinx, as well as others who seek to find their voices and learn to love themselves exactly as they are. And that's what I was mentioning a minute ago. And then Bill, in a letter to readers at the opening of The Bridge, writes, "In my teenage years and in my 20s, had you told me that one day I would find love and would be genuinely happy and at peace, much of the time I would have told you it was impossible. I would not and could not have believed it, but it's true. By holding on through many moments where it felt nearly impossible to do so, I somehow have arrived at this other place where life feels fundamentally different." I thought these letters really encapsulated what I had hoped to get at in this conversation, which is a discussion of writing for young adults, helping them through the difficult years of search and discovery of self and that sort of painful time. And I wonder if we can start with each of you talking a little bit about how you came to write your new books, The Bridge and The Life I'm In. Since I just read Bill's most recently, I'll ask Bill if you want to go first and talk about writing The Bridge.
Sure. Writing The Bridge was certainly the most challenging. It's certainly the most challenging book that I've written. It's about suicide and depression. And, you know, the first 5 novels I wrote were all focused really on LGBTQ issues. And there is that aspect of this book in one of the characters, too. But really, this is a book that's about kids who are struggling with mental health issues. And that's something that I dealt with. I've dealt with all my life. And it was a harder, in some ways, it was a harder coming out because I think I am more sensitive about my battles with depression. There's a taboo about, talking about mental health. And I certainly feel it all the time. But what I really wanted was a book that would help kids feel less alone and to understand that anything that they're feeling now has been felt before by another person, because I think that's something that I would have liked to know as a teenager.
Mm-hmm. Great. And Sharon?
You know what? I've been asked, The Skin I'm In is my first novel about a dark-skinned girl who gets picked on for a host of reasons, one of them being her complexion. So she has to learn to find her voice, to love herself the way she is. And so Malika is an iconic character that people just love. And the bully, Char, is someone that very opposite to people just despise a lot, but they were always concerned about her, right? Whatever became of Charlize Jones? Because she had some fractures in her life, right? Both her parents had died, violent deaths. Her sister did the best she could, throwing parties to make money. But it meant that Char was working, as a servant and in a sense being bullied, serving adults beer and wine and strangers running around the house. So people were concerned about her. And they always said, when are you going to write a follow-up or whatever became of Charlize Jones? And I would always tell them, especially young people would say, well, what's she doing now? And I'm like, well, I don't think about my characters after I've done the writing in that sense. And then, the 20th anniversary of the book happened. Someone asked me again, will you write a sequel? And my answer had always been no. And so, but this time I said no again, but I added, but if I did, it would be from Charlize Jones' perspective and it would be with human trafficking. And because in those 20 years, the world had changed a lot, but not a lot, right? Kids were still being bullied, building online and in person. So that hadn't gone anywhere. But there was this uptick in trafficking and young people sort of disappearing or stories about traffickers and the violence. And way back in the back of my head, I remember saying one day, I think I'll do something with that. Mm-hmm. And when I was asked that question, I gave that answer. I went home and I started writing.
Wow.
So that was my segue into that.
Each of you writes about bullying in your books. And I really like that in both cases, as you've just mentioned, Sharon, take a bully and give her a life and a story and a background. And in both cases, you treat the bully as a human being. You know, the behavior is abhorrent. The person is human. And you go to some lengths to show who the bullies are and what form their behaviors. So I think I'll just keep going with Sharon since Char is the headlining bully from your earlier novel. Do you want to just, and I'd like both of you, though, to talk a little bit about writing bullies, giving bullies both a voice, but also not being easy on them either.
You know, in The Skin I'm In, I think I didn't like Char, at least myself. Ah. Because I have a hard time with bullies, right? I was never bullied, but I didn't like her much myself. I didn't like the way she treated Malika. I didn't like the way she moved through the world, even though I understood it, you know what I'm saying? And so how do you write a novel from the bully's perspective and she's now the protagonist, right? Because you want people to like her, to empathize with her. And I think when you have a Black girl, right, where in the world people see African, they give African-American girls and children less grace, right? And by that, I mean they're harder on them. You know, they feel like they're too loud. Their footprint is too big and too off-centered for America. And so I wanted a way in, and I found a way in. And part of that is, you know, the baby that shows up fairly early. And part of that is also showing Char, I will say, as vulnerable. So when you meet her, she is almost begging Malika to intervene on her behalf so that she doesn't get tossed out of her house or sent south to live with her parents. And if you read the first book, you know, Char doesn't, and Char says it in that chapter, right? I don't beg anybody for anything. They beg me, right?
Right, right.
And so I wanted to start there to say she's vulnerable. You find her coloring by the end of the first chapter. I wanted to remind people throughout the whole book that this is a kid. This is a kid, guys. Not just for to remind them that Black children are children and vulnerable and part of society and that there are children too, but that children who are trafficked, right? That those are people who are trafficked and they are under 18, that they are children too, because it's easy not to see them. Right. It's easy to say they deserved it, or they look at how they dress, or look at how they, right? I think we can be hard on both those groups. And so I wanted as a bully, as a Black girl, as somebody who is trafficked, I wanted people to feel her humanity, if you will.
Bill, do you want to talk about writing about bullies?
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with so much of what Sharon said. For me, I think the process is that I have to start by talking about the action of bullying, and that makes me dislike the character. In this case, it's Molly. And then it's about figuring out how Molly is not a villain, how she's a human being. And in this case, it's because of a dissonance between who she puts out into the world, how she puts herself out, and who she really is. And I think everybody can relate to that. And I don't know if I was too easy on Molly in the end. One of the reviewers said that she thought that maybe I was too easy on her. I think what she does is she makes a viral video about this girl who used to be her best friend, who's very heavy and makes fun of her weight in a very mean way. And it's devastating for the girl who's bullied. I think starting with that process of trying to figure out how do I create this person who has done this terrible thing and make her not a villain, but a human being, is about going inside the head. And the way I always do that is I do a lot of pre-writing, and sometimes that writing turns up in the book and sometimes it doesn't, but it's like, I just want to get inside her head and figure out what she's thinking. And so she's thinking about herself and about how she's gotten in trouble and how terrible that is. But what's the next thing? What's the thing that's going to come up as I go through this, that's going to help me get in and see the crack, the vulnerability, as Sharon said, of the character.
I would say too, that another character in your book that kind of offers a transition point between sort of the best and worst of people is Sarah, you know, who's kind of, she's human, and she says a very sort of unthinking, unkind thing that ends up having a big effect. She's not a bully, but she's not tempering her speech.
Well, we're not always our best selves.
Right.
And I just wanted it to be, I mean, it's just this moment on the subway in New York where a girl is thinking about her French homework or something.
Right.
Somebody asks a question and she just shoots off her mouth with an answer. And it's not a bullying thing. It's just unthinking. And who hasn't done that? Who hasn't said the right thing before?
So. Yeah. Both of these books, these are very distinct books, and yet they have a lot of common themes. And one of those themes is pain, the pain of being a teenager, the pain of the pain that we put on ourselves, the pain that others put on us, and sometimes the pain that we put out into the world, too. And so I feel like being a teenager, that is amplified. You know, I mean, we all feel these feelings, but as a teenager, and I think it's so interesting, you know, we are at our most creative, our most curious, and our most open, but it really comes back to bite us because that also makes us our most vulnerable, maybe. So I just wonder if we can talk a little bit about the pain of the teenage years And I think too, you know, reading helps us through the pain of the teenage years so much, which is just like, these books are so wonderful for kids to read, I'm sure. So let's just talk a little bit about that subject. Do you want to go, Sharon?
You know, I think that's one reason why some people say, why was The Skin I'm In such a popular book? Why is it still, you know, my best-selling novel? There are over a million copies of that book out there. And I think that's one reason, because the honesty, first of all, with the characters, right? Young people are pretty open and they're pretty honest in a lot of the words that come out, unfiltered, I would say. And that doesn't always fit well with adults in the rest of the world. And so to have a character like Malika in the first book that is so unfiltered and also able to share what she's feeling, the good, the bad, and the ugly, her hurt, her fear, her insecurity, so much of what young people feel, I think they feel so much, right? Mm-hmm. And to have novels and books that they can peek into and read and say, oh, yeah, okay, that's me. So for all of their talking, for all of their sort of saying what they think in the world, they also shield, I think, a lot. Those things, like Bill said, your mental health challenges. For me, I had anxiety attacks starting at 30. I started having anxiety, you know, and, you know, may have wrestled not so much with anxiety attacks as a kid, but maybe some anxiety, because I remember going and my mother taking me to different doctors because I had these headaches.
Oh, wow.
They just said it was nothing to it. It was nothing. And so I wonder now, was there something to it? Was there something else going on? When I started going out to schools and doing school visits, it was teenagers that I cracked open to first. It was 14-year-old students that I started saying, you know, I used to have, you know, anxiety when I was in my 30s, that I was in my office crying in my 40s. And so grownups and parents, they're probably thinking, oh, my God. But no, these were really visits where I talked about my characters and I talked about where the part of Malika, where she felt small and little and afraid, where we sort of collide and join forces in terms of what shows up on the page. And so for Char, the fact that she can open up and be vulnerable, the fact that she can start to show bits and pieces of herself, I think ends up being refreshing a lot for readers and for people that might be like her, but aren't always able to even be heard, right? Malika is easier to be heard because she's sort of the nice girl that's being victimized. So you want to gravitate towards her and say, are you okay, baby? You know, the girl in the classroom that's getting good grades, but the grades now they're not so good, and you want to make sure she's okay. And for years, her teacher, who people love, Miss Saunders, she's like the best teacher ever. But I realized, you know, once I wrote a play about The Skin I'm In, well, I think you might have let Charlize down a little bit. That was a hard call to put into play and start to talk about, because people love that teacher so much. We find no flaws in Miss Saunders. But for Char, she wasn't exactly the best teacher she could be, yeah. Right? Because Char is the kind of kid that sometimes people will like move away from, not want to like be bothered with. It's not Char's fault. As adults, we have to be open. But Char's openness, you're talking about openness and vulnerability, Char's openness is different and it appears in the world different. And so I'll be quiet after that.
Do you want to talk about that, Bill?
Yeah, real quickly, I think, you know, that question reminds me of why I write young adult. I mean, the immediacy of all those feelings. I mean, when I started to write, I went to the white hot moments of my life, you know, the moments that were the most challenging moments. And they were all me at 16 and 17. And so the voice came very naturally to me to write from that perspective. I will tell you the truth, which is that as I'm getting older, you know, 18 years after starting my first book, Out of the Pocket, I'm a little bit older now, and I'm having some trouble sometimes hitting the connecting in the same way at 50 to a 17-year-old that I did at 32, when that voice was so immediate. And that's my own little issue that I'm having to deal with. In fact, my newest, the book I'm working on now, is historical fiction. And the reason I did that is because by writing about 1987, at least I could kind of, that's an entry point. You know, a modern teen is going through things that I just don't understand as well anymore.
Yeah. That reminds me of a question I have, which is just sort of like how different it is to live in the world today. And, you know, bullies have social media that they can use. And actually, I think that ends up being harder on bullies because they put it out there and they can't pull it back. Trigger warnings, that's a new thing, or, you know, kind of relatively new thing, trigger warnings, right? So I was going to ask about what each of you thinks about those issues. Do you want to, Bill, do you want to just keep going?
Sure. You know, I have complicated feelings about trigger warnings, because I think that they're very much needed for certain things. Especially when we're talking about something like rape or you know, violence, we talk about those sorts of things. I understand where that comes from. And I also, by the way, understand where some of the other trigger warnings come from. I know what it is like to be hurt as a young person, to feel marginalized as a gay person. That was not fun. It was very, very painful. However, I worry sometimes that we're not allowing people to have emotions when we tell them, you know, whatever. Here are the things that are going to be, you're going to feel here. If you don't want to feel them, don't read the book or something like that. I don't love that personally. It's not like I want teenagers to feel pain, but I think that a book is a safe place sometimes to feel those feelings. So I don't want my readers to skip over homophobia because it doesn't feel good.
Right. Because they're going to come upon it in the world without trigger warnings.
The world will bring you feelings, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a hard one, right? Because I agree with you on that. And I don't write easy.
Yeah,
right. I don't write easy. I just had sort of my first letter, two letters. I got one from a woman I had interviewed for the book who works with an organization that, you know, deals with trafficking and legislation and laws around that, who said, hey, you got it right. I loved what you did. And you did it without being graphic. Okay, so I love that. And then the other one was from a woman who had said, you know, I felt a range of emotions of, you know, and you think about my books and our books for teens, right, Bill, and children, but we all have adult readers too. And she just said, I was happy, I was sad, I was laughing, I was thoughtful and pensive. But I also, you know, brought up some stuff for me, which I'm not sure what that was. But I think when you're tackling tough issues, some stuff might rise up.
Yeah.
Now, we're lucky. We write for teenagers, and a lot of our works are used in classrooms, so you can have those discussions. I know for me, a lot of my work, parents read them with their kids. Young people take them on their own. And so they can be healing bombs as well. The trigger, you know, warnings, it is a complicated subject because you don't want to. Because for teenagers, they turn to books and our words in those worlds for a lot of different reasons. For entertainment, right? Because they might have to, because, you know, the school or somebody's requiring it. And also because they have found something, a subject, a topic, a writer that is sharing something with them that maybe they don't even want to share with the world themselves, you know, or they don't even know that they're going through a certain thing until they run across the book, right? And so I think we do have to be mindful of those, but we have to be, I think, mindful.
Yeah. Overall, mindful. I want to talk a little bit about the structure of the books. In your novel, Bill, I really liked that you decided to offer a number of possible outcomes. And it made so much sense. I mean, two people cross paths on a bridge, each determined to jump. I would never have thought it was limiting to just pick one outcome. And yet, now that I've read your book and thought about it, it's so much better that you offered lots of different outcomes, because it could have gone anyway. And particularly because these teenagers are really, you know, they're in bad places and they're not necessarily completely sure what they want to do, but they go to the bridge. Anyway, do you want to talk about this choice that you made as an author, as how you structured the book?
Yeah, you know, when I thought of it, I immediately told it to a friend who I think of as very wise. And she said to me, she kind of laughed and she said, "Oh, it's like choose your own adventure suicide." And she was kidding, you know, and that's not what I meant. But beyond that, I really thought that there's something there. You know, one of the only things that I, just like Sharon, I write tough and rough sometimes, but my books have to be hopeful in the end. I have to leave the character with hope. And so I had to write the story of them both surviving and finding in each other this connection that is life-saving. And the one that I wasn't sure about writing was the one where they both jump. That's a tough one to write because it has no hope in it. But what I thought I could accomplish was something about the butterfly effect by looking at all. I know when I was suicidal, and that's when I was 27, when I had a suicide attempt, I believed that it would not matter if I was here anymore, you know, and what a lie I was telling myself. I mean, if I wasn't here anymore, this conversation wouldn't happen. You know what I'm saying? And so I just wanted to get at that. All of these characters who don't even know these two people whose lives are forever changed because they're not here. Tilly and Aaron aren't here anymore.
Yeah, I thought that was a really interesting way to depict that, because apart from anything else, you've just lost both your narrators, you know, right. And so you move into this future. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. Thank you. I think it's the part of the book that has been most polarizing for readers. Yeah, some people really love that section and some people are like, "Oh, it was hard to believe." I don't know. Everybody's different, but I'm glad I wrote it, you know, in the end. I'm glad I did.
And in The Life I'm In, as I was reading that book and just talking about structure, you know, there are sections. It's pretty much chronological, but each section, I kept sort of thinking of her kind of going in this sort of like tunnel down. and that was, and then I'm not going to give anything away. I don't like to do spoilers, but in the end, I the tunnel changed for me. But anyway, so do you want to just...
Yeah, on a hopeful note.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Bill talks about pre-writing, and I'm somebody, I tell people, I don't know where I'm going in the book. For the skin I'm in, I knew I was going to write about a dark-skinned girl, and that's it. And then I start writing. On page 3, a bully shows up. For The Life I'm In, I knew I was going to write about Charlize, obviously, and human trafficking. But how everything unfolds, I discover as I'm actually writing the book. And so part of that, how that structure happens is she's on that bus, right? And I realize, girl, you're on this bus a long time.
It's a long ride, though.
It's a long ride. But then that's when I started saying, oh, you need some time frames so people know, so people don't think this is like an endless ride, right?
Right.
You have that. So once you start with the time frames, you sort of need to keep it, but you don't want it, just like on the bus, you don't want it all the time. And so then I realized, okay, rewriting that, okay, there's these chunks of her lives are sort of, her experience when she leaves home is in sections. It's the bus, right? It's the motel. It's her being trafficked. So you do have those sections there. And I think they work really well. And it does, I think, end in a hopeful note of when the one woman wrote to me and said, oh, there is, you know, I laughed. And people might not think that a book that deals with trafficking, that there is any laughter there, right? But she is a human being and she is a teenager and she's running into people along the way. And so there are a host of emotions that she has as well.
Right. I mean, in any given, you know, I mean, I think something you said a little while ago is very true. And that is that we don't like to think about this. We don't give this a lot of our attention if, you know, whatever's not right in front of us. Right. So human trafficking is just a very dark subject. But the way you wrote it, and I'm sure it's very true, you know, there are girls sharing space, which means automatically there will be community, you know.
That there will be community.
Right. Which is not to paint it a pretty picture, but yeah, go ahead.
No, I wanted to show girls helping and supporting girls. I wanted to show the humanity.
Right.
Because we do see trafficking is $150 billion business, right? When you look at the labor side and you look at the sexual exploitation side. For the sexual exploitation side, it's like $99 billion global business. There's a lot of money made, a lot of people being exploited and lives really ruined a lot of times or really brokenness. But I wanted to also show as a writer, too, that I'm trying to not just show trafficking, but I'm also trying to get into the hearts and minds of people and individuals.
Yeah.
So once she's in that house, it, you know, it's impressive in a lot of ways. Obviously, it was meant to be shown that way. But I wanted to show a bit of light for Char, right, as she is forced into that life.
Right. Bill, do you mind if I read that excerpt I mentioned?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay, so this is actually a little bit of a longer excerpt than I normally would, but I want to ask you each about writing adults in your YA fiction, and this was a great scene. So it starts out spring of sixth grade, a Friday night in April. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. They arrived together, but then Molly saw Gretchen. And they did this clapping thing Tilly didn't know about, and they laughed and hugged, and Molly lifted her right foot back almost coquettishly as they embraced, and it was like watching a horror movie because Gretchen was obviously evil. And it kind of goes on from there. These girls all are very much acting like besties, and Tilly's being left out. She goes to talk to Molly's mom, who's chaperoning, and this is a quote from the book, because Molly's mom was almost her mom in a way, and how much time she had spent at Molly's over the years, and almost immediately she got that it was all wrong. Molly's mom didn't hug her tight, didn't comfort her, and tell her it was okay to be excluded or to be different. She rolled her eyes and said, "Till, get a grip. It's not cute to cry at a dance. Go to the ladies' room and get your act together." So that's the little scene I wanted to read. And it sort of broke my heart. But on the other hand, you know, I'm sure that Molly's mom thinks she's doing like a tough love, helping her kind of toughen up. So anyway, I was wondering if each of you could talk about depicting adults in your YA fiction. I'm picturing the Peanuts, where all the adults just don't exist to kids. But therapists, parents, siblings, teachers, strangers, bus drivers, you depict all these people in your books. And I thought that was an interesting thing to think about, how you do that.
Well, I think for me, I'm trying to round out human beings. I want everybody in my book to have a life and a right to be all of the things that they are. And so I don't want any characters who are two dimensional. So, you know, Molly's mother, she has some not great moments in this book. She's not perhaps the perfect mom, but I think that everybody is a lot of things. And, you know, she is a society woman. She is very involved in, you know, that there's certain parents who are all about status, you know, and is my kid, what's my kid's status? That's not the way that I would live, but I think I'm going to give that person voice, even if I don't necessarily respect it. you know, the Bridge has more adult characters in it than anything else I've written. It's nearly balanced. I would say it might be 70% teens, 30% adults. But that's what I was trying to do. I was trying not to back away from the fact that parents of kids who kill themselves have stories. And I wanted to show those stories, and I didn't want to back away. And by the way, I don't think you're allowed to do that in YA until you've written about 5 books. And then they allow you to play a little bit, because they always say, you know, no adult perspectives is sort of part of the YA world. But I think maybe after a while you get to
do whatever you want.
A little more. Yeah.
Sharon.
Well, you know, I've always had adults in my novels. I've always had them have sort of big roles, because I always felt like kids don't live on the planet. Children don't. Nobody lives on the planet by themselves, right? They live really in relationship with adults, whether those adults are pushing them around or controlling them or helping them navigate school or at home crying all the time. They're in relationship and community with adults. And I always thought it was odd if they're not there some sort of way. And so in the life I'm in, there's these sort of angels, I think, that show up in Char's life. And I call them angels only because someone recently referred to them as angels. And I thought, yes, that's what they are. Because I wanted people to understand that there are people out there to help them on the journey, whether they were being trafficked, whether it was in school. And some of those adults are, some of those angels are adults in the book, right? There's the bus driver. There's the woman that lives in the motel, Char, you know, and they're not around long necessarily, but they're there. The teacher is, right, and her sister is, but those other adults are there long enough to make a difference. And sometimes it's a matter of just seeing a kid, right?
Exactly.
You look like you're lost, right? You look like maybe, are you okay? Are you safe? Is somebody hurt? You know, and it might be just long enough for a kid to make a different decision or to get help or to feel good that day, right? Because maybe that's the only person that's telling you you're fabulous. And so I just can't imagine for me writing YA world where you don't have adults. But what I am noticing is, I never thought this would happen. As my characters become more solid on their feet, I see that the role of adults in the book differently. So one day I had this aha moment, like, oh, but I think at the same time, Bill, you could probably appreciate it. What I realized was, as I became more solid on my feet, right? As I became more, because my thing was, I mentioned anxiety, but sort of self-confidence, right? Sort of that imposter thing I still deal with. So as my self-confidence, as my sense of my own power, I've noticed, oh, I think your characters are, you know. And so the adults are, they're still there. They're still solid. They're very, very present for me, but they're a little bit sort of different. They're starting to hold a different space too.
That's really interesting.
Isn't it? You don't think you're all connected with your books and all this stuff, but it's like, oh, this weird. Writers always are talking about craft. And so to me, it's all of this control, right? Crafting and everything is sort of intentional. How I write, I feel like, is in a sense, letting go of a lot of that, what's not intentional, the ethereal, the part that, right, that you don't. And so that part I just said, well, wait, as my life got together, got more solid, so did they, which is not conscious at all, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's the moment of this hour that I needed to hear. Because that's right. It's so much of it is, we think it's control, but no, it's just the stuff that happens, that ethereal. I love that.
Yeah. All right. Now, if I may, I'd love to read a short excerpt from The Life I'm In. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. And I have no idea if I'm going to be able to do her voice justice, but we'll try. A baby should be washed before bedtime, but I ain't want to wake her because I might not be able to get her back to sleep. So I put her to bed in her street clothes, hoping her diaper ain't wet. I'll sleep sitting up in the chair at the desk in the middle of the room. In the morning, I'll see if the $1 store got sheet sets, Similac, and other things we need. Standing over her, I watch her sleep on her back with her itty-bitty fists balled. For a minute, I wonder what she dream about. Her mother, milk, playing in a crib. I hope she dream about nice things. I love that. And I also thought that that was this great moment. I don't think it's not that far into the book, but it's this moment where I start to see her start to change a little bit. And I think that when the baby comes into her life, this is not her baby, this is the baby that she takes on. That is a moment of real change and growth for her. So I thought we could talk about, you know, characters in novels and stories are supposed to change. Mm-hmm. So I just thought that maybe I would let that be the entry into that conversation about change, character evolution, character change. So do you want to start, Sharon?
Yeah, thank you for that. You don't always get to hear your own words read back, so that's really good. You know, Char is like 16, and to take on a baby that's not yours, she doesn't always do the best job. But the fact that she has decided to take that on is monumental, right? And for this girl especially, who probably in the first book seemed very self-absorbed, right? Mm-hmm. Very internal, when she wasn't bullying her, just in her own world. And so the characters have to change throughout the novel, right? They can't stay static. They have to be growing or evolving, or, you know, or taking a left turn right down a dark alley, right? And making better choices or worse choices. All of those choices helped them to get to the next level and to evolve and to change and shift. And Char does quite a bit of shifting, right, in that novel, as she's sort of climbing a ladder, going up, going down, standing still. And while she's doing this, a lot of people have told me I was holding my breath. And those decisions are how you know you sort of can recognize sort of her growth through those decisions. But again, they're the decisions that the writer is also putting on the character. That the writer is putting on the character because there's an end goal, even though I don't know where that end goal is going for me. I don't know where it's going. Obviously, I have some control along the way. If I don't want her to go left, she's not going to go left, right? But I try to give them some room because all of that is about her growing and shifting and changing.
What about you, Bill? When you're working, how aware are you of your character's growth and change, or does that sneak up on you and you go, oh?
I am always aware of it, but I think the best moments in the book are things that happen without me pressing so hard. So mm-hmm. It's like, I think that those are the magic moments when I'm just sort of writing, maybe I'm like the conduit, and I love to be surprised. But I mean, in a book like The Bridge, those characters are so similar to who I was. You know, Aaron, the gay boy who really wants to be admired and loved. Tilly, who is Korean and adopted, but feels like she's not part of her family. I'm not Korean or adopted, but I so relate to her character. I'm aware of how I changed, right? So finding the magical moments can be challenging because I'm pushing a little bit. Like, I want Tilly to figure this out.
Yeah.
Writing it hard.
I think what Bill is saying is that as an author, a writer, you have to surrender.
Yeah.
Right? You have to do a lot of surrendering, I think. For the best novels, for whether you pre-write or not, you have to be able to surrender so that you're surprised, right? I'm surprised a lot along the way. And then you're going back and you're rewriting or whatever, but still just surrendering so that this story, this character, these people, I always tell people I am following a parade. I'm not leading it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that. I like to ask my guests what they've read lately that they might recommend to listeners, other people's books that you might recommend.
Go ahead, Bill.
You know, as soon as anybody asks this question, everything I've read in the last month goes out of my brain. I read Tornado Brain by Kat Patrick, which is another book about mental health, a girl who suffers from ADHD. And it's pretty interesting. And I read Like a Love Story, which is a book about the AIDS epidemic in New York. Abdi Nazemian is the author. It's a young adult novel. It's really well.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Oh, I read, well, Love is a Revolution.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
By Renee Watson, which is really good, about a young girl who meets a guy who she sort of shifts and morphs herself to sort of suit him. And sort of has to find herself, remind herself of who she is. But it is a lovely, extremely well-written love story that'll have people thinking deeply about self-love as well and what we do for other people and being our own true, authentic selves. And Muted, which ends up being about the power men in the music industry sort of wield over young artist, and again, sort of a finding your voice book. Mm-hmm. So, and it's in verse for people who like verse or haven't experienced verse. It really is a page turner.
Okay, great. Thank you. So I wonder if you know what you're writing next and if you talk about your next project.
For me, you know, again, it's, you know, the skin I'm in is like probably 23 years old, and I just wrote the follow-up, but I'm about to hand in the third book. So it turns out it's a series, right?
Oh, no way. That's great.
The third book in the trilogy, is that what you want to call it? And that is from John's perspective. For people who know him, he was the person that teased Malika a lot about her skin color. Char bullied her for really other reasons, but John really was a person struggling with his own sort of being dark. But, you know, but he was a funny guy in that book, you know. He was also very funny. So I think in this book, he's very funny and different, you know, he's very humorous. But he's still in love with Malika, guys. And so.
Okay.
Those great. Are some of the things.
Wonderful. That's fun. How about you, Bill?
The book that I've handed in about a month ago is called Destination Unknown, and it takes place in New York City in 1987, which is where I came of age, where and when I came of age. And it's an opportunity for me to explore similar but different from Like a Love Story, the trauma of growing up around AIDS.
Yeah.
I thought that I had about no chance of getting to my age.
Right.
I thought that people like me died. Yeah. So I'm exploring two characters caught up in that maelstrom.
Okay, wonderful.
It's also a love story.
All right. I like to finish up by asking for advice for writers. And in the case of this interview, I wanted to ask for advice about writing beginnings and endings in YA literature. One thing I noticed in the beginning of The Bridge, and let me just quickly see if I can find this sentence. And, you know, sometimes things strike me and they aren't at all what the author had in mind. So just feel free to say no. But at the end of the first page, Bill, this is when Aaron and Tilly are on the bridge, and Aaron is very sad and very traumatized emotionally, and he's sobbing audibly. And you write, "The girl turns her head toward the sound, toward Aaron." And I thought, oh, it's so interesting. She's seeing him. And so much of what kids need is to be seen. And I felt like recalibrating that sentence. So it's not just towards the sound, but it's toward him, toward Aaron. That was interesting. I liked that about your beginning. And I just thought maybe we could talk about beginnings and endings. And when it comes to endings, I'm wondering if you think that you need closure. Do you need happiness? Do you need hope? Do you need reality? Do you not worry about what you need in an ending? So in each case.
Well, I definitely can start with the ending and say, In a young adult book, yes, hope. I just that's something I feel strongly about. It shouldn't be saccharine hope. It shouldn't be, you know, anything. And it doesn't have to be a big change. It's just a chance for the future to turn out better than things were. And for the beginning, yeah, you know, the moment that Aaron and Tilly see each other up on the bridge, what I'm dealing with is they're both in their own head, right? I mean, that's where we mostly live. And so there's this opportunity to see another person. And the question is whether we do it or not. And I relate to that as all the time. How many times do I just walk like a zombie past somebody and not even give them the time of day or not even notice their existence? So it's a nice chance for us to, you know, either do well or not do well at seeing somebody else.
Yeah, I liked that moment. And having read from Bill's opening, I'll just tell you that the opening sentence of Sharon's book is, "Maybe I was born bad," which is a very engaging opening, of course, even if you don't know who she is from the previous book.
You know, Shayla, I feel like I want people to pick up my book and not put it down. And so, so I think first sentences are important. In the skin I'm in, it was the first time I seen her face, I got a bad feeling inside. Uh-huh. In Bang, it was they kill people where I live, right? And for me, I really don't have to fight really hard for those sentences. So they sort of just, the character, it just sort of starts. And so I think it's important to start sort of it with something that makes people want to keep reading. But if you are new to writing, I think that's important for you to think about and aim towards, but don't get lost in the weeds trying to get it, right? I think, you know, it's something you can grow to, or it's your style or whatever. In terms of what Bill said, I agree. Why children's, you need some hope at the end, but you don't have to tie up all the loose ends.
That's right.
And sometimes my readers will say, "Well, whatever happened to, and why didn't you?" I'm like, "Oh, you know, guys, we have a partnership here," right? So we are, in a sense, creating this novel together, right? I'm handing you a completed novel, but you're going to bring your experiences, your hopes, your joys, your disgust, whatever, into this, and you're going to, when I loved Bill, you were probably saying, wait, you go to talks, and you hear from readers, and you think, sometimes I'm taking notes, and, oh, I never thought about it. Really, I did that? Oh, yeah, that is what that character is like, right? So there's this partnership that is going on. So I don't always feel compelled to end it with a nice little neat bow. I do feel compelled to give you some hope so that when people read about the life I'm in, and they read Char, I've had someone said, you know, I used to hate Charlize Jones in the first book, but now I really love her, and I'm glad I went on that journey with her. And a part of that, at least a little bit, is the ending, that they feel like, hey, she's going to be okay now. That's important, I think.
Yeah. And she worked hard.
Yeah, thank you. She did work hard.
Yeah. Well, I loved both of these books. I'm going to just mention them again. The Life I'm In is a sister novel to the best-selling The Skin I'm In, and it's published by Scholastic and written by Sharon G. Flake. And The Bridge, written by Bill Konigsberg and published again by Scholastic. I want to thank you both very much for speaking with me. It's been a pleasure.
It's been great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. What a lovely conversation. I'm glad we did this.
From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM WBTV LP Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. That was a combined interview with Bill Konigsberg and Sharon G. Flake about their new novels, The Bridge and The Life I'm In, both published by Scholastic. You can learn more about their work at their individual websites, BillKonigsberg.com and SharonGFlake.com. Both of my guests write about the pain, joy, discovery, and hope of the teenage years. This week's Write the Book prompt is to write a paragraph on each of those four subjects: pain, joy, discovery, hope. From the perspective of your own teenage self, perhaps you're still a teenager, or maybe you fit that description 5 years ago, perhaps 50. No matter what the case, a young adult sensibility does live inside of you. Harness those feelings and memories and write. Good luck with your work in the coming week, and tune in next week for another prompt or suggestion. This morning, I saw a couple of news headlines that offered hope and caution, both. On NPR, a headline that said, "New daily coronavirus cases drop below 100,000 for the first time in months." And on CNN, I saw, "Widespread vaccinations in the U.S. won't come until the summer." So all of this is good information to know. And so, as I do every week, I'm urging you to continue being careful. Wear a mask. Don't gather with others unless you can assure lots of distance, preferably outside. Avoid crowds. Try to find the books that have come out, even as book tours have been canceled. I hope that you're able to read and to write. Keep in mind that the archives of Write the Book offer weekly writing prompts to help you in your work. I'd love your feedback about the show. Let me know if you'd like me to interview certain authors or if you have events to announce. If you like the show, rate it in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, and like it on social media and talk about it, please. Be sure to tell your friends about Write the Book and about the podcast site, writethebook.podbean.com. You can visit Write the Book on Twitter and on Facebook for updates, and you can access the podcast at my own website, shelaughswithoutus.com. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. You've been listening to Write the Book. This is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington, Vermont, streaming online at 99.3 WBTV.org. Stay well and have a great week.